Yes, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, and this is Now We're Talking. And when I started out doing this show 6-7 months ago, you know, the intention always was to do a live interviews one-on-one. And I think the first couple months of the show, I did a lot of phoners, and I think, you know, that worked fine. But the goal was always to have a real human being in the studio. And today, I do have a real human being. I'm pleased to report that I'll be interviewing David. Thanks for coming in. This is David Ward.
My pleasure.
And actually, David, I picked up David Ward from the DQ, which I feel like for us will become a tradition. And I said, your manager was there.
Yeah.
And I had to clarify whether or not that was customary for you guys to take your meetings at the DQ. It isn't, but I suggest that you think about that.
Oh, we will.
I think that you should. But we had the chance to meet at the DQ and then to drive up here. And then before we came in, we were having a great conversation. And I said to you, like, part of me is worried if we get too into this. Not that we'll like lose everything, and we'll, but I just felt like there's maybe a balance there. But I think the truth is that kind of us just doing the show now is hopefully an extension of that conversation.
Yeah.
And for some context, David and I both sing with a band called Side One. And did you go to the Phoenix Theater Department at UVic?
Yeah,
is that how you know Zach Stevenson?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, for us, there's a lot of shared history and shared roles that we play. But yeah, we were having a conversation. I'm interested to, we'll play a couple of your songs and to just kind of have a conversation about yeah, some of the themes about what it is to be, you know, have the courage or be crazy enough to try to make the effort to express yourself through music. But I guess let's just offer a little bit of biographical context before we do that. So when did you begin writing music and releasing? Is that going back at least 10 years, I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, like early teens probably, because my first guitar teacher... his purpose was to get me to write songs.
Okay.
It's kind of like, hear three chords, come back with a song.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a good teacher.
It is great. Yeah. And so, and then we went to a point, and after a year, he said, okay, I have nothing left to teach you. So
you don't want to sound immodest,
exactly.
But that is what happened.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
No.
He's like, you're ready, my son.
You're ready for the
go
world.
Forth and conquer. But you were. You're ready for the next stage is probably what he meant.
Exactly. The next stage. And so that's kind of how I've done all my learning is every once in a while I'll just drop in for a few lessons with another guitar player that I look up to. And then that'll usually give me months, sometimes years worth of stuff to kind of work on.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a great teacher. Was that his MO in terms of encouraging students to think about writing, or was that something that you expressed an interest in?
I have no idea.
It seems unusually cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Maybe I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I just know it's such a, from my experience for myself and with others, it's such a difficult hurdle to cross into feeling like it's allowed to write a song, that it feels like a cool thing if you're going to start playing the guitar to be thinking about that right away. Do you remember any of the songs that you wrote at that time?
Oh, yeah.
Are they recorded somehow or somewhere?
Maybe, yeah, because I had all sorts of tape recorders and things like that I recorded on. I'm interested, well, you said like allowed to write a song. How do you mean? Like, what is that?
Well, I just feel like, I'll speak for myself,
yeah.
But I do imagine that it's true for others, and I've had this conversation with others, but I feel like that sense of even just to sing, to play guitar, or to write songs, different versions of that, I don't know, in terms of maybe what in terms of what society expects or you yourself expect, that feeling of you're only allowed to do these things if it's clear to you and to everybody that you're good. If you're not good, you're wasting everybody's time. I mean, I know this is certainly true if we just focus on singing. You know,
right.
I've had this conversation so many times with people where they will be very quick out of the gate to say that they're tone deaf. And I know, because I've thought about this and I've looked into it, it's a very small percentage of the population that truly is tone deaf. So it's something that I think people say because they've been led to believe culturally, because I don't think it applies to all cultures around the world, but in our culture, I think, that you're only allowed to sing if you're great. And, you know, think about things like American Idol and all that, and there is the ridicule that goes along with not being good or great. I think it just causes people to... And it's not just singing. I think it's any form of expression. I think it causes people to really second guess whether, you know, they themselves whether there's legitimacy to trying things.
God, that's such a sad way to think about creativity, though.
Yeah, it is.
Because
it sure
of the catharsis that's created through acts like that and the growth and what it can contribute to other areas of your life.
Yeah.
I mean, I always think that, because I went to theater school, like you said, and
yep.
I think that was huge for all these other areas of my life,
yes.
that the creativity that was involved in that.
Yes.
And one of the things that we did in theater school, I remember, was like some kind of vocal project where you basically write a long list, call out all the people in your life that you believe have put a close on your voice.
Critics.
Critics,
censors.
In whatever way. Your sister telling you,
sure.
Shut up with your vocal warm-ups.
Sure, it's bound to be a long list. I'm sure the lists were long.
You can make it as long as you want. I guess it'll maybe depends how sensitive you are.
Yeah.
Whatever. But that's kind of an interesting exercise regardless.
Yeah.
If you think about that, because maybe a lot of that is not justified. It's what you put on it. And
sure.
Just shove it aside. That didn't mean anything.
Sure. Well, and I think in order to be equipped to shove it aside, I think that what it comes down to, whether it's what we're discussing here or just fundamentally in terms of figuring out who you are and how you relate to the world, it relies on role models and mentorship, mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. around you.
Sure.
Who guide you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, who we are is a sum of the people around us. And that's
right.
why instantly I was like, who's this teacher? What was
right.
he up to? That's really cool to me.
Yeah.
And that's another thing we have in common. You talk about how theater for you opened those pathways. That's my story, is that I really moved from being sort of never having any notion that I was allowed to do these any of these things.
Mm.
But through theater, exploring the joy of expression and just going for it. And
right.
that's what opened up the gates for me musically.
For me too, like my, you know, speaking of early role models, like my mother is such a crafty woman. She literally crafts,
cool.
you know,
yeah.
and was always doing craft sales and setting up her booth everywhere, everything from the whole beeswax craze to, you know, like whatever it was. And she's still like, now she's got a job at Michael's, the big
yeah.
American box store
yeah.
craft store,
yeah.
where she like teaches jewelry classes
okay.
and things like that. So we were always,
around.
Always around. Even like at Christmas, it was like we were making t-shirts with the, you know, squeeze paint
yeah.
and all these kinds of things. So it was
yes.
always encouraged.
Yeah, it's always interesting for me to understand what whether it is family, and that's of course going to be the best opportunity for encouragement or learning, or whether it's teachers or whatever. It could also be we were talking about influences before, and whether it's media personalities or artists, it's like that's yeah, you hold on to those people so closely because they just helped clear the path. So it sounds like she really, from an early age, was like, yes, you can create things. This is how you do it. Okay, cool. Let's try.
Yeah.
Let's give it a whirl. Let's
yeah.
see what happens.
Yeah.
And it's so tragic. I think there are a lot of people who don't necessarily benefit from that. So for me, it reminds me to be grateful when I've received that and how it was never a given.
Hmm.
Yeah. I know that we're going to fly through this hour. It was important for me to make sure that I got a couple tracks of yours that we could play today. So we'll make sure we do that. I figure we'll do one in the top half of the show and another in the latter portion of the show.
Mm.
But I just knew that we're going to burn through this time. So I want to make sure that we get the chance to talk about a few things. Let's talk a little bit about your experience going to the UK. Because for me, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but in my mind, to me, this is an expression of your commitment to putting yourself out there. You know, it's not just being relegated to your identity as a original musician in Vancouver, but to know that there's a world out there and to see how your music can fit in. So I guess the first question is why the UK?
Yeah, I mean, like any of these things like we were talking about earlier, it's a bit of a shot in the dark, but the last full-length album I did, Golden Future Time, had critically done very well there. We picked up articles in The Guardian and some of the, and they just have a lot more music trade papers there, so
sure.
we got a lot of good feedback, and my father was born there, so I have dual citizenship.
Great.
And I was just like, I need to make a move. I need to, you know.
And the citizenship makes it that much easier. So why
not
put in? I have the same thing, so I can appreciate
right.
what you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. This,
and
yeah.
we both pine the loss of the European citizenship.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That's a whole other,
that's a whole other
kettle
thing.
Of fish.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So okay.
So went and, you know, I went with my manager, and you kind of go with all these preconceived notions of what you're going to do and maybe what you're going to achieve and how you're going to do this. And
yeah.
that kind of goes out the window fairly quickly, even though you're still trying to stick to that plan.
Yeah.
I only thought I was going to be there for 3 months.
Okay.
And then that stretched out into a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the people, we sort of did the thing like I was telling you about earlier. It was like I just want to play my butt off. And I love the idea of residencies, of like being in a room once a week or however often it is, for however long it is, to kind of stretch yourself, go past your, I suppose, insecurities to reach that level of, hopefully, transcendence.
Sure. To push through your limits and see what you're made of.
Exactly.
In terms of creating new material?
Everything, man. Yeah. Just being able to stretch the tunes into places that you hadn't thought of before.
Yeah. So that you were taking existing songs and fleshing them out in this?
Exactly. Seeing how far I could stretch them live without thinking too hard about it. which also sometimes was a mistake.
Doesn't always work out the way you want.
Well, fairly early on, this is a bit of a tangent, but I landed a really great gig opening up for Frazee Ford, who's a Canadian who used to be part of the Be Good Tanyas, who
had
a really successful folk group. And now Frazee's got an amazing career as a solo artist, and she did this record that has done really well in the UK. And so I was opening for her at the Union Chapel, which is this historic grade two listed building, huge. Everybody from York to Bryan Adams to whoever it is has played there. It's not a stadium, but it's, you know, it's still a big venue and it's beautiful. And I go there, they have asked me to do a solo opening slot. And so I go with this same idea of starting the show kind of blank slate. I know the song I'm going to start with, but I'm just going to just go for it in whatever direction it is. But I mean, I was in that as soon as I got on stage, and I'm engulfed in blackness, you know, and just me in the center of this huge room, and everything just started to feel so foreign. As I reached for my guitar, I just...
The nerves creeping in?
Well, I don't know.
It was like an outer body experience
that also was kind of in my head, if that makes any sense. An outer body experience in the worst way possible, not the good outer body experience. And what I was attempting to be sort of an improvised beginning became something that just didn't go very well. And also kind of set the tone for the rest of that trip in some ways.
This is early in the trip?
It's very early.
Okay.
How I wanted to do things, what this meant to me, why was I so devastated by this performance, you know, things like that.
This is interesting. I want to get more specific and really break this down. So how long had you been in country?
Maybe
when this
a month or less.
Okay. And what was your hope or expectation? Were you thinking, okay, this could be good? Was part of this that you saw, as you say, the opportunity for it to set a good tone? And you were kind of crestfallen that you felt like that wasn't going to occur?
I suppose so. I don't know. I didn't really want to think about it that much, to be honest. I think, but in the lead up to the show, people were saying, you know, yeah, we're in the band. There's going to be a lot of press there, a lot of important people, you know, and when you're still at the bottom rung, even if you're like, I don't care, some of that seeps in somewhere.
Of course, you know? Of course. I mean, you've gone all the way there.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know that you got some good reviews in The Guardian. You know that like some foundation's been laid.
Yeah.
And even if you do your best to not get too hung up on it, you're going to be aware of what the accelerants are because you want to accelerate in the right direction.
Yeah.
So do you think that looking back on it and you think about that night, when you sound checked, before you went on stage, when you kind of go through what led up to stepping into the black void, do you think that part of it was that you were, as you say, getting too much into your head? Or is it a mystery what happened?
It's a bit of a mystery, to be honest. I know I was very nervous going on, but when I got on stage, it wasn't like I was super uncomfortable. But like I said, it was a bit of an outer body experience, and I couldn't do the little things that would have made a world of difference. The amp sounded terrible. All I had to do was turn around and twist a few knobs and it would have been okay.
The things that when you're feeling confident and self-assured and present, you just take your time.
Yes.
But when you're feeling like a little bit self-conscious, or as you say, you're kind of all those things that otherwise that you do with ease, you're kind of like, my fingers aren't doing what I want them to do right now.
Right.
You notice it.
Yes.
You start to think about it. Then it's... You say, I shouldn't be thinking about it.
Exactly.
And it creates this like feedback loop or something.
That's it. That's totally
so how long was your set that night?
Oh, not that long, like half an hour maybe or
It's 5, 6, 7 songs
or something? Yeah, yeah, long enough.
So during the first song, as you say, you wanted to, it sounded like you wanted to embrace some improvisation and to hopefully benefit from that. And then maybe you're feeling a bit constricted. How did you, I'm curious, because I've been there, after the first song and there's the applause and maybe they were enjoying it, but you're thinking, oh, it's just polite applause or whatever. In that moment during the applause, when you're thinking, okay, I've still got a bunch of songs to go here.
Yeah.
What was it like to move forward in the set? Were you just kind of stuck in that moment the whole set?
I think I was just kind of stuck a bit. And, you know, I'm describing this as a lot worse than I think it appeared to people outside.
Of course.
Because, you know, my dad was there because he decided to come over for a week to explore and then come see the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, and but it's my dad, too. But he said he loved it. And, you know, anyway, yeah, I was kind of stuck.
But
in
you
that.
Trust your dad to be as objective as he can be, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah. And it just kind of got worse, too, because I kind of did this other thing where I was.
Tell me the truth, David. For the record, just so everybody understands, David is a first-class performer. And what's great about this is my tendency is I want to get in there and explore our insecurities and our flaws because I want to move beyond us just, you know, putting our best foot forward and being good enough that's legitimate. I think it's, for me, it's really interesting, especially as a fellow entertainer, to hear about this stuff because it's so intriguing. Before we were talking about the insecurities of this experience of trying to, whether it's trying to make a living, which is a whole other kettle of fish, but even just like the goal to express yourself through music, and especially as you get older and you have competing needs and just the insanity of trying to have a sort of even keel and even temperament when you're going through these wild fluctuations. And here you are, you've gone to the UK and there's all these possibilities and there's so much at stake in a way in this moment. And really, you know, your dad says it went well. You think it went horrible. Maybe the truth is somewhere in between.
Yeah.
It's so tempestuous. It's like all over the place,
totally.
You know?
And just going back to that moment, too, of sort of being in the moment and taking the time to do those things. I remember later on, had a friend that took me to a concert at Royal Albert Hall that was sold out. And I'm not going to say the name of the artist because I can't remember her last name. but it was sold out. And she started the first song, restarted it 4 times. But it didn't matter.
The first song, yeah.
The first song at the gate sold out. She's celebrating the 20th anniversary of the seminal record.
Yeah.
She's got her band there, a string section.
Wow.
The whole thing. And she's... I'm sorry, I have to start again. You know, 4 times.
That's a lot.
It didn't matter.
Because she owned it enough that she wasn't rattled by it?
I think she was relaxed enough, but in the end, the audience is kind of with you.
Yeah, they're on her side.
I mean, it's a little bit different for me because they didn't pay money to see me, but they're not out there being like, I hope he screws up.
Yeah, I can't wait to throw this tomato. I've been waiting for weeks to throw this tomato at somebody.
Exactly.
It's going to be this Canadian. I know it.
That's
it. It's true. So. You know, it's funny how sometimes we can feel like there's like an us. And it's funny. I think about this with stand-up comedy. And you think about the language that goes along with performing well. I killed it. I destroyed. It kind of suggests this opposition between performer and audience.
I've been thinking about that a lot. Just in a general term, why the violence? Like you always say, I murdered that.
I think it's because there is some underlying sense that the audience is to be defeated. They're like the fear that they will be indifferent at best or hostile at worst will be defeated through my incredible achievement or right. something. I think that yeah. at least that's an underlying thought, which is expressed through some of this terminology. Definitely in the case of stand-up comedy, it's very obvious. With music, I don't know, it's maybe slightly different. It's in stand-up comedy, it's full-on war. It's full-on war. And I think for me, my experiment with stand-up comedy was partially to... I don't know, to recalibrate as a performer and put myself in the worst possible situation, because then it makes performing as a musician truly seem quite effortless.
Right,
because
I really bet.
People are generally on your side.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Well, let's go ahead and play Golden Future Time. So this is the title track off the previous LP. Is that correct?
That's
Do
right,
I have that
yeah.
right? Okay, yeah. cool. Let's go ahead and dive in with that right now.
It's our golden future time. 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 Give a song to sing. Polish up those bells so we may ring in. The time to claim our riches. It's our golden future time. It's our golden future time. Talk the way you do. Hypnotic is stranger. Preach your change. Keep the fire bright. And I'll dream of the day you keep saying awaits me. In our golden time, in our golden future time, it's our golden future time, it's our golden future time, in our golden future time, in our golden future time.
David, I have to ask you, I was listening to these tracks before.
Yeah.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing when somebody says, man, you sound a lot like young MJ, like young early 20s MJ. Is that a cliche? People say it and you're hostile towards that? Or is it complimentary? Or does it depend on the day?
Oh.
Because as soon as I heard these tracks and thought that,
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, if I sounded like Michael Jackson, I'd be pretty happy about it. But if people were always saying that, it might get old.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, you go through phases of this stuff. I mean, ultimately, people are going to do what they're going to do. And I think, like, say what they're going to say. And it's just a way for everybody, to people, to relate to something and anchor it. And,
yes.
And that's okay. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, ultimately, hopefully one day, you know, your voice gets to a point where, you know, maybe you become the reference point.
Right. You want to be, if you're going to be an artist, the goal is to sound like David Ward.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. Yeah.
When you hear your voice on these tracks, do you hear the influences that over the years have inspired you in terms of vocalists?
I've heard how far my voice has come.
Really?
Because I was, the other day, my dad was over for dinner there, and he had played something, was on his podcast shuffle or whatever. Not his podcast, his
iTunes shuffle.
Yeah, thing. iTunes shuffle. And, I just sounded so different.
It was from like 10 years ago or
something? Yeah, exactly. And it was just a lot more, I suppose, it's not quite the right word, but hollow. It lacks tone, I guess.
Okay, so some technical things, but maybe also what was behind it
technical
in terms of
things
maturity
and
confidence.
I recorded my very first thing with Josh Ramsey, who leads a band now called Marianas Trench.
Okay, yeah.
And the joke with their band was that they used to call me Matchbox Dave because they thought I was trying to sound like Rob Thomas. Rob Thomas to Michael Jackson.
Oh, what a journey. What a journey you've been on. Who will you sound like 10 years from now?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. It's one thing to sound like Rob Thomas. It's a whole other thing to sound like you're trying to sound like Rob Thomas. That's a whole other category. Matchbox Dave.
Yeah,
wow.
I
promise I won't hold on to that tightly, but in this moment, I am going to enjoy that.
Yeah.
Well, imagine if you heard, how long has it been since you heard those aforementioned tracks that you did when you were a teenager with the guitar teacher?
Yeah.
Has it been a long time since you've heard those?
Oh, yeah.
God, I wish we had that right now.
Yeah.
so we could actually hear the difference on the show.
I don't even know where that is.
See, now that we have to hear at some point to see what you sounded like. That would be actually like, it's interesting to have those things as a document of your progression, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, when people hear themselves on their voicemail, they're mortified to hear the sound of their own voice.
It's a bizarre thing.
So imagine for us when it comes to recording your singing voice, it's even more vulnerable than asking people to leave a message.
Well, exactly. And I think that's why people sound like so many different things or have so many... I've been thinking about this quite a bit, and with the latest record, I've been thinking about it just because with the newest record, I was inspired a lot by Kamasi Washington's record called The Epic, and the singer on that record was Patrice Quinn, and also somebody else that inspired Kamasi a lot was Max Roach and his recordings with Abby Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And Abby Lincoln and Patrice Quinn, I just feel like there's nothing standing in the way between what they're tapping into and how it's coming out. Like it there's just such a purity and an authenticity to it. And there's no, especially like I was telling you, I worked this open mic night at the pizza restaurant that I was working at part-time in London.
Yeah.
And you hear people doing all sorts of strange things with their voice.
Right.
Because, like you say, it's so difficult to hear your own voice.
Yeah.
So we do this thing that sounds like this person. Or
yeah.
We cover it up in these ways because we think it might be cooler.
Yeah.
And so to hear that just really sort of maybe think about that again, just trying not to let things get in the way. And I love theatrics and voice too. Like,
sure,
you know, all those yips, yells, and howls of like Al Green or Prince or Deanne.
It's flourishes.
It's flourishes.
It's like playing your instrument
in
a way.
It is playing your instrument in very quirky, specific ways.
Yeah.
And so I'm all into that, but I'm also into like how truthful, how pure can you be when you're
yeah how do you
deep?
Figure out how to sing like yourself, you know? It's hard yeah, enough right. to figure out how to sing.
Yeah, well, this goes back to what you were talking about earlier in the lobby about getting to that just yourself as yeah. a person.
I was gonna say, I was
and
gonna
that's
say
what your voice is.
I was gonna say, which is harder, learning how to sing like yourself yeah. or just figuring out who you who are you in the are. First place? Yeah. And maybe we're hitting on something there. It's yeah. like maybe when you talk about, you know, when you do hear those, maybe it's not even artists. It could just be a specific performance, but it could be an artist, a performance, whatever. When you hear that and you're connecting with it and you intuitively believe this is like the sweet spot in terms of it just feels effortless and mm-hmm. it doesn't feel self-conscious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. What does it take to get to that place? Is mm-hmm. it a reflection of that person's life and what they've gone through in their life and them getting to a place, even if it's just temporarily, maybe it's not like forever,
right?
Where they're for some reason transcending that, you know, self-consciousness that makes it just even just slightly affected in a way that they might not even recognize otherwise. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I remember, too, watching Patrice when I went to see Kamasi in London, closing her eyes and, like, beating on her heart. I mean, it almost reminded me of theater school or something, you know, when you do these kinds of things.
Exercises
that are supposed to tap you into something else.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah. But I didn't disbelieve her for a second because it felt so authentic, you know? She was just like wrenching it out of her chest somehow. That's
it's interesting you
like.
Mention that, because when I think of Celine Dion doing that, it doesn't
Does
feel
do
authentic. Maybe for her it is. This is just my own bias, listeners. But I've always felt like that's not working for me. So it's good to hear that somebody can do it in a way that is compelling. Yeah, it's interesting. It's sometimes when I'm performing, you know, I've been playing recently a fair bit just by myself, guitar and vocals. And right now at the moment, I find myself quite self-conscious, especially when I'm first starting out, because not only am I the performer, but I'm the sound guy, and I'm just thinking very mechanically about a lot of things. Like, am I going to get fired? Am I going to get the gig back? Like, I'm so worried about so
many
things.
That's the toughest thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's just part of getting back on track and gaining some confidence. But there's been a few moments where I've kind of checked in with myself and said, you know what, like, it sounds fine. Like, everything on the list, I just try to relieve myself of that and say, how about just for a moment here? You just pay attention to what you're doing.
Because
it becomes so automatically, now it's this song, it's 4 minutes long. And I'll challenge myself to try to not be self-conscious and maybe close my eyes where otherwise I wouldn't, and just try to tap in. And right away, by becoming mindful like that, it can change my state. And I sometimes just do that and smile to myself because I realize, oh yeah, I'm playing music right now and this is nice.
Totally. I mean, that was the whole idea about going on stage and without an idea of how I was going to start the song, right? It was about being mindful and being able to be very present, and it just backfired on me in that moment.
Yes.
But that's the idea.
That's the risk. That's the risk.
I mean, but in the hotels, it does feel like another thing because, you know, obviously with art you need to be in that place where you don't give a crap, like
I know I do where you're not dominated by the fear of negative consequences. I mean, even this interview is a reflection of that, because everybody has their own style. I think there certainly could be value in me having prepared very specific notes and questions for this interaction, but I know for me that I feel like we're going to get to the good stuff if I take the risk to not necessarily have it all framed in that way.
Sure.
In the interest of moving beyond the things between you and me, the pieces of paper, like I want to get them out of the way to create the possibility of just having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's my instinct as well. Like I said before, when we were speaking before the show, I was like, oh, some of the stuff I've got to make sure that we talk about on the air. Mm-hmm. And then just relieving myself of that and saying, you can't worry about that. And I always think about, like, when I get uncertain about this, I think, well, what's it like when you go out into the world and you end up having a great conversation or connection with a person? Is it because you contrived to do so and you prepared for it studiously, or because you were just open to the moment? Mm-hmm. So of course that has application performing as a musician.
Sure.
Especially when you put yourself up front and you're singing, which is a particularly vulnerable thing.
But going back to the hotel thing, I mean, that can be a hard thing to do when you are making money from it, you know, or like for me, it's my bread and butter.
Yeah.
And lots of times you are being micromanaged. There's some guy in a suit. Maybe you don't see him. He's hiding in the foliage somewhere.
Maybe he's behind glass.
Yeah.
Like a two-way mirror, whatever.
and he's making those calls. You don't hear until like your agent
gives you the feedback.
Gives you the feedback, and is like, or just stops booking you at that place.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay,
yeah. Yeah, because to a certain degree, you're aware of the fact you've been hired, and you want to make modifications to be hireable. But on the other hand, you don't want to go too, like you say, you don't want to go down that wormhole of becoming like, that's what you're doing. You're just becoming a product that is going to appeal to the hotel lobby crowd when you also have ambitions that are completely the opposite of that. What's that like for you? What's that been for you like the last few years? Because that's something we've had in common, and is trying to manage the cover music thing as a source of income to kind of bankroll the original thing. For me, that was something I did about 5 years ago and have done less so recently. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'll be honest, I got to a point last year where there's other stuff going on, but I think after years and years of it, of the feeling the pressure to do that, I felt a little bit burnt out by it. Now my perspective is totally different because I've had a break and I've had an opportunity to reassess. But do you ever worry about that where you feel like, I know that this is allowing me to do this, but do you ever feel burnt out by, as you say, the man in the suit?
Of course. I mean, I think there's the longer you do it, the more you just go through different phases, burnout and joy. And I mean, there's so many great things about it in that you can get a lot, like your history of music, when you study stuff that intensely so that you can perform it right for crowds.
Yeah.
You're taking in a lot, and and oftentimes from a lot of the greats,
Totally.
And
playing with great musicians along
and you're,
the way.
Usually you're playing with great musicians, like the caliber of talent. Like you often have the best musicians in the city in these bands, right? And the friendships and all that stuff. there are a significant number of downsides to it, too.
It's fun when you've had shared experiences with other humans and you can just kind of wink at each other and know what you're talking about for sure. Yeah, but you and I both, one of the things we have in common is we've both been so lucky to tap into such an awesome network of, as you say, not just great musicians, but great people.
Yes.
And that's one of the things I have been truly aware of in the past and just continually aware of. This is like, wow, man, I remember when I was first started this journey, first trying to play some chords on the guitar, and I didn't know anybody that I could play music with, much less people who were amazing at it. And so for me, that's actually one of the ways in which I measure progress in my life in terms of music is the company that I'm keeping. So and that's what's led us here today. We've still got some more time. By the way, if you're listening, just dial us, tuning into the station right now. This is CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Jeff Bryant, and this is Now We're Talking. Speaking today with David Ward, we played his track Golden Future Time earlier. We're going to play another track in probably about 10 minutes. But let's talk more about songwriting, what that's been like. We've kind of tapped into the history, different moments of you songwriting, but maybe just currently at this moment or thinking about songs that you've written and recorded recently. I saw earlier when we were having a conversation, you have this book here.
True.
And we were having some moments I could tell we were connecting. And so when you started to write something down, I wasn't like, what the hell is he doing writing something down? I knew it was likely the case that this was connected to the fact that we just had an shared insight.
Sure.
And then you explained, for me, sometimes it's just a question of I want to continue to be present in the interaction. I don't want to be distracted by the rumination of that thought.
Right.
So I have to quickly scribble it down.
Yeah.
But that was my thought when you first wrote that down, as I thought, oh, here's a guy who puts his money where his mouth is in terms of making sure when those moments happen in the day, he scribbles them down so that when he's songwriting, he's collected those moments. Is that one of the functions of this book?
Sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's got many functions. I think, again, maybe giving credit to my mom, I was growing up just sticky notes or napkins all over the place until the gift of the journal came.
The actual bound paper.
Yeah, exactly.
In book form.
So, you hit the nail on the head. So.
Yeah. So when you set out to write, well, there's all, I know from my own experience, I'm sure it's true for you, there's different ways in which you write a song. But is that when you're lyricizing, do you look to the book and flip through? Mm-hmm. Or are you remembering, what was that thing that I was talking about last week? What does it look like when you're translating the chicken scratch into a lyric that we might hear in one of these songs today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be that. Thinking back to an experience, I mean, I was sort of sometimes with albums. I've been treating the last bunch like focused projects, and so I'll sort of, I don't know. It's always like just build it up like a creative project, you know. You know, if some things are pulling on me in my life, I'll follow those threads and then just add to that experience by reading about it or listening about it or all these different things and compiling that into a, you know, quote unquote box. And sure. And then ending up with I said this the other day. It's so funny, you know, when you become aware of things you've said. And anyway, like an archaeological dig, essentially, that has all these different layers of strata of where the project began,
like
and
sediment,
how it's growing.
Like that's sediment,
it. Exactly,
or like tree rings or something. I was going to say,
I'm going to say tree rings next time.
So. I'm giving you all sorts of options for the next interview.
Yeah, exactly.
Just going to keep throwing it out there. I was going to say, it almost sounds like, you know, the records are actual records or documents of periods in your life.
Sure.
I mean, that might be true for a lot of artists, but it sounds like in your case, it really is. As you say, I'm thinking about some of these themes and I'm reading about it. It's like you're living inside some ideas that get expressed through the songs. Is there sort of a thematic through line that kind of happens in some of these albums then between the songs?
Yeah, for sure.
There is. Okay.
Yeah. Some of them maybe are a little less connected and some of them are really connected. Oh, man. But yeah, I started with a couple of really strong ideas for this latest record and then just kept building upon that, and also musically how I wanted to create it and certain influences I wanted to expose myself to throughout the process and kind of keeping within that and then knowing, you know, creating the walls of your box and then knowing when you're stepping outside of them if you want to and knowing when you're not, just seeing the edges of it so you know what you're creating with rather than just being open to endless possibility, which can be
crazy making.
Yeah, sure. Or just will shut you down completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Starts with crazy making.
Yeah. First is crazy.
And then
making.
Because you're crazy, you shut down so you can survive.
That's it. It's a 2-step process.
I want to play this track, Be Here. Was this from an album or an EP?
Yeah, this was from Golden Future Time as well.
Oh, it was as well. And I was listening to it a few times earlier today, and I was saying to you also earlier that I'm a real sucker for songs that are bittersweet, and this is very beautifully melancholic. Sometimes I can appreciate artists don't really want to describe the meaning of a song. So I don't know where you fall in that category. Sometimes people will say, I want the listener to decide for themselves. Mm. But also I'm curious what the song is about for you and how it relates to what you were just saying about how you go through certain moments in your life and processing different ideas.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I struggle with that a lot about, you know, describing songs. But I, you know, with this one, it was just, it was a conversation I had with a good friend about people in his life that he was watching go through something quite heartbreaking. And anyway, that's what I'll say for now.
Can you say what Here is? You don't have to if you don't want to. And the reason I'm asking is because I was listening to it today and I was noticing for myself, and this is one of the beautiful things about art and songs is that, and for me as a songwriter too, I'm always trying to think, for me, the songs that I enjoy the most that I've written are the ones where I know what it's about for me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be about that specific thing for the listener. So I'm listening to this song earlier today and I'm thinking, I know exactly what this is for me.
Yeah.
And I know what stuff that's going on for me right now. And so I know that there's some projecting that could be happening. But to me, as I listen to the lyrics, for me, it was really about like a refuge, like in terms of realizing that pain can be temporary and there's so many things that happen, regrets that can happen. And for me, it's like, I don't know, just thinking about here in terms of be here, being sort of, whether it's in the company of somebody that cares about you or showing kindness to yourself, just being in that sacred place where you can, I don't know, maybe just feel like your true self and take a step away from the chaos. So I don't know. I just, for me, that was my interpretation.
That's great. Yeah. And that's like, yeah, I would say that's 95%
of it. All right, I got 95%.
Now, I'm interested in if I had said, no, That has nothing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Would you be upset, and would that change the song for you?
I would have shut down the interview, and I would have had mixed feelings about the entire encounter leading up till now. I would have gone back and said, now I'm pissed at you for encouraging me to have that medium-sized blizzard, because I knew that was beyond my purview. No, I think that because of the conversation that we're having, I think I'm prepared for the idea, as I said, that I'm totally projecting.
Yeah.
And I don't need – that's the thing, is that I think that if a song means something to you, it's not that it necessarily needs to have been what the person was saying, because I think there's a universality of even just the sound of the music. Forget about what was intended through the lyrics, where it's kind of cool to have your own filter for combining the sound of the music with the lyric and then adapting it to whatever your life experience has been or the experience you're going through right now. But I kind of, in this song, I really hear, yeah, the opportunity for it to be whatever it meant to you, but also for people to, I don't know, just to seek solace in this song. So I think that's what, in my mind, makes it a beautiful song. So this is Be Here. David Ward is here in studio, and check it out. Yes, of course, that is Be Here on CITR 101.9. You are here. Glad that you're here with us. This is Jeff Bryant hosting Now We're Talking. See what I did there, David? I took the name of the song and like a classic radio DJ worked it into what we're actually doing. But we were having a great conversation about this song as we were in here listening to it. And I was just saying to you, you know, it really, when I was listening to it earlier and listened to it now, I think about reassurance, you know, the emotion of reassurance. And, you know, it's just, and also I was speaking about how, what a beautiful thing it is to leave something behind, you know, it's like to think that you can record a piece of music that will survive, out-survive you. And while you're here or beyond your time, mm-hmm. to create music that can reassure people, regardless of what that song specifically means to them, is definitely a beautiful thing, man. So for me, count myself definitely as one person who's reassured by the song, and I'm sure that other people are too. So that's for me a great reminder of what of why it's worth it, why it's worth it to keep recording music, set aside as much as you can the obsession with outcome, where it's leading, you know, what the Guardian will think about this one, and all that stuff, which is day-to-day life stuff.
Yeah.
But to take a step away from that and think, I feel like I did something that mattered and that gives me meaning.
Well, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier about process and how much, sitting in that basement of the pizza place, watching the open mic nights and playing all over the toilet circuit in London and night after night, seeing all these different people do this thing and you doing your thing and kind of coming back to questioning, why are you doing this? And when you step on stage, what are you trying to achieve? And coming back to, kind of being in the moment and process and connecting with that, and I'm just losing my train of thought.
Well, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm thinking as you're talking about that, it's like it's not something you can induce. It's not something you can control.
Yeah, exactly.
We can sit here and talk about it.
Yeah.
We can do everything we can to try to, build ourselves up to being a person who goes out there and finds the moment. Mm-hmm. But really, it's surrender. It's abandon.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think the in order to create those moments of abandon, there's a lot of preparation that can go into that. Going for me, shedding more on the guitar or vocals, so that when I get up there, I'm not thinking about mechanics or anything.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's the goal.
It's the goal.
And that you can just loose yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can just be there.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing. And I'm glad that we're talking about this, because this is definitely something that's on my mind, and it's a large topic, but I'm glad that we're tapping into it, because I think we were speaking earlier, now I can't remember whether it was on the air or off, but we were talking about, singers and how, what does it take to find your voice? And I guess part of it is just finding yourself. And also thinking about the fact that there is no finish line. It's not like, when I get to this point, I'm going to find myself and then the rest will be smooth sailing. The older that I get, and of course, a lot of other people listening to this have made this realization, so they'll understand. The older you get, the more humbled you are by the fact that you just do the best you can and move along and try to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It goes up, it goes down, but there is no finish line.
Yeah.
And of course, that's going to parallel the artistic experience as well.
Yeah.
Indefinitely.
For me too, the idea of celebration kind of helps to create moments and be in moments and recognize parts of the journey, because there is no finish line. So, but take those moments,
landmarks.
And, or they don't even necessarily have to be, whatever landmarks means.
Sure.
But frame these little moments, whatever they are, little triumphs or setbacks, and go have a drink or smoke a cigar.
Momentous moments, like being aware of moments.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I feel like moments make you live longer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether it's you paying attention to them or generating meaningful ones.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can live longer, aside from avoiding getting hit by a bus, is to occupy yourself, your life, with moments, to characterize it with some differentiation of beauty and bittersweet.
Well, and the hard part of recognizing moments is the idea of a finish line, because then you're just focused on the finish line.
Yeah.
You're no longer stopping for the process, the moments, the journey. Yeah.
And with that, we've crossed the finish line. As I see that Gareth is here ready to host his show at 7 o'clock, More Than Human. Dave, thanks for coming in.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, going back like several years, I've had an ambition to do exactly what we've done today. So it means a lot to me now. I know it'll mean a lot to me looking back to remember this opportunity, and I'm glad we got to do it. So thanks
me
for coming
too,
in studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. Okay, guys. See you next week.